You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Abby Solon, Laura Delago, Sam Talner, Davlat Vailadula. The producer is Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 VH Philomena on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Natasha Delapine.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Coming up tomorrow morning, Friday, on KBOO at 7, it'll be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Ani and Lynn will host Positively Revolting Talk Radio. At 9, on Veterans Voice, hosts Marvin and Angie of Northwest Vets for Peace speak with three vets from the group Veterans Challenge Islamophobia, Ramon Mejia, Nate Tarani, and Jake Meyer. At 10, Air Cascadia will not be heard. Instead, we'll have an entire hour of Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher speaks with Jana Bitten of the Oregon Center for Nursing and the Oregon Action Coalition. Also, Christopher Wallace of the Oregon Student Nurses Association about the Oregon Action Coalition and the future of nursing. And at 11:30, Jenka Soldersberg interviews Israeli activist Dalit Baum about boycott, divestment, and sanctions, also called BDS. Thanks to all of you KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
When the Oregon State Legislature passed Measure 11, it meant that teenagers charged with certain crimes were tried in adult courts. Now that situation has changed. Karen James from KBOO's Prison Pipeline spoke with Innocence Project's Bobin Singh about the district's attorney's announcement last week to bring some of the kids back to juvenile courts.
Recently, Multnomah County District Attorney's Office announced a policy change pertaining to young offenders charged with certain Measure 11 crimes. Measure 11 is Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law that prosecutes offenders under 18 years old as adults. I'm here with Bobin Singh, Executive Director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Bobin, talk about the work of the Oregon Justice Resource Center.
The Oregon Justice Resource Center is a nonprofit that I co-founded in 2011. It's a public interest law firm. So the Oregon Justice Resource Center bases its work in direct representation. And from our experiences in direct representation, we push for systemic reform in our criminal justice system. Our three flagship programs are the Women in Prison Project. We work with women in Coffee Creek by providing Native women civil legal services to assist them with reentry. By working with the women, we began to understand issues related to women intersecting with the criminal justice system, so from arrest to conviction to sentencing to conditions and DOC. And so by being in the prisons, we're able to actually get a better sense of what the women are experiencing. Our other project is the Reentry Law Project. We run a civil legal clinic at Mercy Corps Reentry Transition Center, which is located in Multnomah County. We provide clients of the Reentry Transition Center civil legal services to assist them with legal issues they may be facing that were exacerbated by incarceration. So a lot of poverty issues that have been exacerbated by incarceration. And again, from that, we began to identify issues in which men and women are facing on return and try to push forward systemic reform And our last project, our flagship project, is the Oregon Innocence Project, in which we represent men and women who are currently incarcerated or formerly incarcerated, asserting claims of factual innocence. And from our experiences working with individuals who are asserting factual claims of innocence, we work to identify systemic reforms to prevent wrongful convictions. Among the other issues we work on are the death penalty. So we're working with a group of other nonprofits, six nonprofits, to identify strategies for repealing and replacing the death penalty. And later this year, we'll be launching a juvenile justice project in which we'll be working with juvenile offenders who've been tried as adults or convicted as adults and working with them to for clemency. And then again, beginning to identify issues in which we see are, that need systemic reform around that offender population. Through all that, we look at how to create a more transparent, fair, and accountable criminal justice system. So our projects are different lenses, and then we can see different issues that may come up in all of them, such as excessive punishment, prosecutorial misconduct, ineffective assistance of counsel, so on and so forth.
The recent Multnomah County District Attorney's Office announcement of a policy change pertaining to young offenders charged with Measure 11 crimes. Remind our listeners, what is Measure 11?
Measure 11 was passed in 1994 and implemented in 1995. And essentially, it's mandatory minimum sentences. These are sentences that you must serve, no wiggle room, for certain specific person crimes. And so if you are charged with these crimes and ultimately convicted, you have to serve a mandatory minimum sentence in order to satisfy the conviction and the punishment.
Describe how cases are handled when young offenders are charged with a Measure 11 crime.
So Measure 11, I think, is particularly destructive for the juvenile offender population, because if you're 15, 16, or 17 years old and you're charged with a Measure 11 crime, you're automatically placed into adult court. Technically, you're statutorily excluded from juvenile court. So it's an automatic placement into the adult court. What this means is that you don't get the protections of the juvenile adjudication process, which is usually a juvenile's court cases are sealed or protected, not public. The focus is on rehabilitation. There's, you know, more protected sort of hearings and process for the juveniles. When juveniles are waived into adult court, they're tried and processed through as adults. And so it's public. The media can report their names, put their pictures online. Even if they end up ultimately being convicted of something less than Measure 11 because they're in adult court, they still get the adult conviction. So all the stigma and consequences of an adult conviction end up staying with the juvenile. Someone that's 15, 16, or 17, you're talking about, you know, lifetime sort of ramifications when it comes to employment, housing, education, all those opportunities that, you know, one would want to pursue as an adult.
So the Multnomah County District Attorney Rod Underhill announced a policy change effective immediately that affects juveniles facing Measure 11 sentencing. What will change under this new policy?
First, I mean, I think it's great that Rod has implemented this policy. It is a small step in the right direction. I think, you know, he could go much further. But the policy itself allows for certain Measure 11 crimes, Tier 2 crimes, robbery 2, assault 2, and kidnapping 2. If you're charged with these crimes, there's a list of considerations that the prosecutor can look at and determine whether or not to resolve this case in juvenile court as opposed to adult court. For example, so if a juvenile is charged with an assault 2, it'll be indicted and filed in adult court. And then looking at the matrix or criteria that Rod has put out, the defense attorney, the teenager, the juvenile, and the prosecutor can look at all those factors. And if to the satisfaction of that prosecutor, the individual meets the criteria, then they will have then that opportunity to have that case resolved in juvenile court. It would be pled to a guilty plea in, or guilty in juvenile court under intense supervision or probation.
So there are 21 crimes under Measure 11. So this only affects 3 of the 21 crimes listed under Measure 11?
That's correct. It's only 3 Tier 2 crimes, robbery 2, assault 2, and kidnapping 2, and only if you're charged with those specific crimes. I mean, what I will say is that the difference between like a Rob 1, Rob 2, Rob 3, or Assault 2, Assault 1, it's not that much at the end of the day. And I think some of it is dependent on how the prosecutors end up charging these cases, you know, whether or not people are eligible for this new policy. Just to be clear, if a juvenile is charged with any one of these crimes, the prosecutor will begin to look at what are called aggravating factors and mitigating factors. Aggravating factors meaning those factors that work against the individual, that are not favorable to the juvenile individual, and mitigating factors that are favorable, that somehow make it more so than not that this juvenile should be have his or her case resolved in juvenile court.
And this has not been occurring with Measure 11 charges, is that correct?
Not like this. I think this is different in the sense that you could have the case dismissed in adult court and then resolved in juvenile court. Before, I think what was happening is that these cases would be pled down to less than Measure 11 crimes. So most recently, there are the four Grant High School students that were charged with Measure 11 crimes and then pled to probation. But because they kept the case in adult court, they would still have the adult conviction. So in this case, it would be in a juvenile adjudication. The juvenile system then would work with the juvenile offender as opposed to the adult system. And I think overall, that's much better for the juvenile offender. So I think it could be different than what's going on now. But obviously, it matters in how the policy is implemented and who ultimately becomes eligible for this type of resolution.
So what are some of these factors?
Some of the factors include, I think on the aggravating side, you know, deliberate cruelty to the victim, permanent injury to the victim, degree of harm or loss significantly greater than typical, offender motivated in part by race, color, religion, ethnicity, national origin. Some of the mitigating factors include a lack of criminal history, the offender acted under duress, the mental capacity was diminished, harm or loss was significantly less than typical. The offense was principally accomplished by another. I mean, I think what you're ultimately looking for, it just seems like a balancing test between of culpability, things that go to the offender's culpability. Were there factors that made this crime more extraordinary, I think more towards the adult sophistication, if I assume that's what the prosecutors are looking for, or are they looking for something that's more sort of random and more, I guess, extraordinary in the juvenile's life? But the way, I guess, my concerns with how they've articulated both the aggravating and mitigating factors, that they're so broad and somewhat subjective that it seems like, anyone or everyone or no one could be eligible for to participate in this sort of new policy. So it'll just be yet to be determined to see how the office does this and how many kids are actually, end up becoming eligible for this. I mean, there are some concerns. I think like one of the aggravating factors is that offender denies criminal conduct. From our perspective, we don't think that by remaining silent, someone should be punished. I mean, a mitigating factor is cooperation with the prosecution's office and taking responsibility. And I think that's fine. You should be rewarded for being accountable if you've, committed the crime and you're willing to do that and then, cooperating with the prosecution. But I don't think that you're that you have a right to remain silent. You don't, that should be a punishment against you for not being able to participate in this policy. And another concerning factor is that it says offender has concerning mental health history, indicating risks to the community or non-treatability. Not really too clear what this means or how it'll play out, but on initial read, at least from my perspective, it feels like there could be the potential of punishing people for mental health issues or histories. And so I think that's something that we should be very cautious of and be, and come back to and make sure that that's not happening.
It sounds as if these factors are limiting youth offenders to first-time offenders.
I think that could be what ends up happening. I'm not sure. It just depends on how this plays out and how much context or how much of the criminal history ends up weighing or how much of a factor it is when an individual prosecutor makes this decision. I think one of the concerns is that the factors as articulated may end up having a disproportionate effect on kids of color or people living in poverty or don't come from stable homes, that some of those circumstances may end up punishing kids that may be otherwise eligible for this program. So I think those are definitely concerns that we should be aware of. And not shy away from being able to acknowledge that those are things that may end up happening. And if we're honest about it up front, then I think hopefully Rod and his office will be able to address those issues. And
so, Bob, and give some statistics of juveniles under 18 who are currently serving time in Oregon prison system.
You know, we have data for every juvenile that's been waived into adult court from 95 to 2012 via Measure 11 or being charged with aggravated murder, and nearly 4,000 kids have been waived into adult court. Well, according to the Oregon Department of Corrections website and data, in total, there looks like there's about over 1,000 kids under some sort of supervision or state control, supervision or jurisdiction in the state of Oregon.
You talked about the disproportionate impact on youths of color. Talk a little bit more about that.
What I'll say is that what we've began to notice, and we're still, I want to be upfront that we're still cutting through the numbers and the data that we have, but what we see initially is some disproportionate use of Measure 11 against kids of color. And some of it is county specific, some of it is overall, some of it is how the cases have been resolved. We see that kids of color are more often than not convicted of Measure 11 crimes, where their counterparts or white kids are able to resolve for less than Measure 11 crimes. But what I'll say is that we're working with a PSU professor to try to understand the data a little bit better. And hopefully later this summer we'll have it out. But yeah, that's probably all I can say on it right now.
So what is the Oregon Justice Resource Center's position on this new policy change in Multnomah County?
Overall, we think it's a step in the right direction, albeit a small step, but it is a step in the right direction. And I think a couple of good things have come out of this. One, you know, as far as I know, Rod's the only DA that has publicly in this explicit way acknowledged that kids are different and they should be treated different in the justice system. I think that's a really good thing, and hopefully this policy will actually work and it'll prevent kids from having Measure 11 convictions in adult court. I think it's not far enough in the sense that, you know, the default position needs to be that we treat kids as kids, and only in the extraordinary circumstances should we put kids into adult court, and the burden should be on the state and it should be done through a hearing. Right now, the default position is if you're charged with a Measure 11 crime, you're automatically treated as an adult because of the crime you committed, and it has nothing to do with